The Old Testament lectionary reading for today is from Genesis 21, beginning with verse 8. It's just the reading assigned for today, but it happens to be one of my favorite stories in all the Bible. Maybe it'll become yours. Hear the word of God. The child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, playing with her son Isaac. So she said to Abraham, "Cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of this slave woman shall not inherit along with my son Isaac." The matter was very distressing to Abraham on account of his son. But God said to Abraham, "Do not be distressed because of the boy and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you, for it is through Isaac that offspring shall be named for you. As for the son of the slave woman, I will make a nation of him also, because he is your offspring." So Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder along with the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered about in the wilderness of Beersheba. When the water and the skin was gone, she cast the child under one of the bushes. Then she went and sat down opposite him a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot. For she said, "Do not let me look on the death of the child." And as she sat opposite him, she lifted up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the boy. And the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What troubles you, Hagar? Do not be afraid, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Come, lift up the boy and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make a great nation of him." Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. She went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. God was with the boy, and he grew up. He lived in the wilderness and became an expert with the bow. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother got a wife for him from the land of Egypt. Sisters and brothers, this is the word of the Lord. I've been a pastor over so many years now that the Bible has become something of a Rolodex for me. I've met so many people now over so many years, and so many of them exemplify one or more of these Bible stories. And I want to tell you about one of them today, someone I'm calling a modern-day Ishmael. For many years, I was a small church pastor in a small community, and from time to time in the neighborhood, there were people who wanted nothing to do with the church, but were going through a crisis of some kind and reached out to me as a pastor. This is the story of one of those times that happened 30 years ago. I was at home in the evening when the doorbell rang. And I went to answer the door, and when I opened it, there on my front porch was a middle-aged woman that I had seen on my walks around the neighborhood. She lived one street over and one block down. I knew enough about her from our chats that she was a Christian who wanted nothing to do with the church. And she knew enough about me to know that I was a pastor, and she knew where I lived. Standing next to her on the front porch was a young man, a teenager. I estimated him to be 16 or 17. For our purposes today, let's just call him Hank. After we all greeted one another, the woman pointed at Hank and then looked me squarely in the eye and said, "Fix him." That's all she said. And then we both watched her spin around, walk back to her car, get in, and drive back home. The teenage boy and I did not know each other, so we shared an awkward moment together looking at each other. And finally I said, "Would you like to come in and chat?" And he said, "Yes, I'd like that." He had a lot to talk about that night, and I had some things to say in response. He'd had a rough life, and my heart went out to him. His parents had divorced when he was a boy, and his mother married another man, and the two of them moved in to his house. And that man became his stepfather. Hank told me that his stepfather couldn't stand him from the beginning. Emotionally abused him for years. And recently threw him out of the house, apparently with his mother's blessing. Hank then took to sleeping at night in the high school band room. And he did that undetected for a couple of weeks until the woman who had been on my porch found him sleeping and took him home to live with her and her family. She was a band booster, and her daughter played in the band. Hank had been living with them by that time for a few weeks. As we talked that night, I learned several other significant things about Hank. Probably the most important was that he said he was suicidal, and it had, for the last year, recurring thoughts that he ought to just end it. Then he told me that he had recently converted from Christianity to Islam. And then he told me that he thought he might be gay. The bright spot in his life, he told me, was his music. He played 5 different musical instruments, and his band director had told him that he was a musical prodigy who was playing way above his current grade level. Hank told me that night of his passion for music, how early and easily it had come to him, the hours he had spent with it, the joy it brought him. He said it was his life, his gift, his primary language, his solace, his escape, and a kind of salvation in a life that had mostly disappointed him. Well, hearing all this, I was immediately kicking myself for missing that early morning seminary workshop, Pastoral Care for Suicidal Islamic, Possibly Gay Teenage Musical Prodigies. Yeah, like I'm ever going to meet one of those, you know. I was fresh out of seminary, very early in my ministry, and I felt like I was in way over my head. And I felt like there were scores of people probably in the neighborhood who could care for Frank in much better ways than I could at that moment. I prayed a lot in my heart as we talked, asking God to help me not make anything worse for Hank, and maybe even add something helpful to the mix. I kept thinking while we talked that the providence of God had brought the two of us together rather than two others. And I kept having that funny feeling that God was up to something in his life and in mine. So leisurely and methodically, we talked through his life and his particular joys and challenges and about what possibly God might be up to in his life. By the end of the night, I felt like we had made a little headway on some of his issues. In regard to his suicidal impulses, and we needed to deal with that first, because if he followed through, all the other issues in his life were moot. You never know what you're going to be like as a pastor in a counseling situation. And instead of being quietly compassionate that day, I found like I was playing the role of the stern Dutch uncle. And I told him sternly not to take his own life and not to even think about that. I talked to him of the great value of his life in the presence of God, what a divine gift it was, and what courage it took to live that life. And that God had given him unusual musical gifts, and there was a great big world out there that was just waiting to be blessed by those gifts. And I told him what a tragedy it would be if he, having received those wonderful gifts from God, did not end up sharing them. I said to Hank that day, "I know your life sucks right now, royally. But hang in there. The first chapter's pretty rotten. But I bet the second chapter's going to be worth waiting for." Regarding his conversion to Islam, I noticed from our conversations together that Hank knew surprisingly little about a faith that he said he had converted to. We kept talking about it, and in time, it became clear to both of us that it hadn't been a conversion at all, but more of a stunt, really. A way he had concocted to further enrage a stepfather who was already rejecting him. Hank said, at the end of that conversation, it had worked like magic. We did not seem to make any headway together on deciding whether or not he was gay, which I could tell was a matter of some urgency to him. He seemed to need to settle this question for himself sooner rather than later. As we continued talking, I found out that Hank was a reader, and so we decided together to meet the next afternoon at the local branch library, which we did, and we went through the old card catalog. It was 30 years ago. And then we went through the stacks of books, and I loaded him up with books that contained autobiographical stories written by teenagers who had struggled with the same part of their identity. And I said to Hank that day, "Go home and read these stories written by people like you. See if some of the details are similar to some of the details in your own life. And then when you get done, let's talk again." Well, we never did. Hank disappeared before we could talk. After not seeing or hearing from Hank in more than a month, I finally went over to his house and learned from the neighborhood woman who had been on my porch that night and who had so graciously taken Hank into her own home that Hank, several weeks earlier, had come to her to tell her that he was definitely gay. And she decided, she said, that she couldn't live with that. And so she asked him to leave immediately. She had no idea where he went and had no idea how to contact him. And neither did I. And Hank, for some reason, never called and never came by. 5 years later, I was in the downtown library this time, checking out some books. And as I stood in line to check out, lo and behold, who should be sitting at the circulation desk but Hank, all grown up, calm, and confident. And the questions were just tumbling out of my mouth. Hank, what are you doing here? How are you? What's happened in all these years? No one was behind me in line that day, and so Hank told his story. He told me that after he had gotten kicked out of his second house, his life went from bad to worse. But slowly, slowly, it got better. He got accepted into the university music program and had just graduated with honors in music performance. And in his last semester, he had applied for and received a full-ride scholarship to earn a master's in music performance at Juilliard. He told me his dream was to one day play in a big city symphony. And his last words to me were these. It shows you that if you just hang in there during the tough times, things sort of even out after a while. Then I lost touch with Hank and haven't heard from him since. I tried to look him up once on the internet, but found no sign of him. I think of him with joy from time to time, that once very troubled teenager, twice kicked out of his own home before the age of 18, struggling then to know who he was and getting so discouraged with it all that he almost ended it, but landing on his feet. And now I picture him somewhere out there, blessing audiences over and over with his musical talents. The good news is that the same God who put Hank back on his feet after such a dark time of his life had done the same thing thousands of years earlier for the boy Ishmael and for his mother Hagar. The story of Ishmael and Hagar is a reminder to us that being part of the people of God is no immunization from life's problems. And it's no guarantee that we won't have family conflicts. The two women in the household, Hagar and Sarah, had been having problems together for some time. God promised Sarah and Abraham a child in their old age, but the child was slow in coming. And Sarah got impatient with it all and came up with her own plan, which was that Abraham use their slave woman Hagar as a surrogate mother, which he did. And together they gave birth to the son Ishmael. And they all thought for a while that Ishmael was the son of the promise, the child of the promise. But then Sarah finally got pregnant and gave birth to Isaac. And Sarah, who had been held in contempt for years by Hagar because she was childless, suddenly decided that she no longer wanted anything to do with either Hagar or Ishmael. And she told her husband Abraham to kick them both out of the house. Abraham, the story says, was deeply conflicted about this because Ishmael was, after all, his own son. But after being reassured by God, he did it. He gave them food and water and put it on Hagar along with the child and sent them packing out into the wilderness. Just like Hank, Hagar and Ishmael got kicked out of their own home. So Hagar and Ishmael, the story says, went out and wandered in the desert, going as far as they could until the food and water ran out. And then Hagar, in complete despair, having lost all hope of a future for them, put Ishmael under a bush to die. And then she went a long way away so that she wouldn't have to watch him die. And she sat down and broke down and wept and waited to die herself. What she didn't realize was that of all the places she could have chosen to sit down and die, she chose the one place that was right in front of a well of water that would save both of their lives. What are the odds? But she was crying so hard, her tears so obscured her vision, that she couldn't see that well of water right in front of her. So the story says that an angel of God had to open her eyes so that she could see the well that was right in front of her. And when she saw it, she drank and gave Ishmael to drink. And the story says, they lived. They prospered. The Lord gave Ishmael the talent to put food on the table every day. And through his mother, even found a woman for him to marry. Sisters and brothers, this story is reassurance to all of us that God is faithful and with us even during our hard times, whatever they happen to be and whoever we happen to be. God is always going out before us to prepare the way and has prepared the resources that we need when we face the crisis that we will face. For Hagar and Ishmael, the resource that God provided happened to be water. For Hank, the resource happened to be 5 musical instruments. For you and the ones that you love, that resource might be something entirely different. But be assured of this, that no matter what you are going through in this life, God will give you what you need and when you need it. Though God or one of God's angels may have to open your eyes so that you're able to see the resource that God has placed right in front of you. The good news is that God proved faithful. And who did God prove faithful to? Abraham and Sarah. Ishmael and Hagar. And thousands of years later, to a modern day Ishmael, whom I have come to call Hank.